I am Presley, and you are...
That was kind of an intro.
Yeah, I know. Amazing.
We're slowly making progress. Yeah, I'm Brian, or Presley's dad, as most people actually know me as we're learning on the comments. And what is this?
And welcome to Validate Me, which is a podcast where me and my dad show each other things that we like in hopes that the other will like it as well and call us valid.
Think we're cool.
We're valid.
That's right. We always want the other person to think that we're cool. So that's our primary objective, I think, with the podcast. Yeah?
Yeah.
So, like I said, we take turns every week. Either Presley will assign me some stuff to do and then we'll talk about it, or I'll assign her some stuff to do and we'll talk about it. This was my week to do the assigning. And so I assigned, we watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail together. And then we also listened to Appetite for Destruction, Guns N' Roses.
Yes.
First album. So, do you care which one we talk about first?
I do not. It seems like in the past we have done them in the chronological order of things, of like when we experienced them first.
Yes, yeah.
So I guess we would be doing Guns N' Roses.
Do we do Guns N' Roses first this week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do Appetite for Destruction. Okay. I've got a couple of little factoids that I looked up when I was pulling this stuff together. Okay. So a couple of cool things. So it looks like this came out August. Let me look. Yeah, August of 1987. It debuted at 182 on the Billboard 200, so just barely squeaked into the Billboard 200.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I thought it was extremely large.
But then by September of 2008, so, you know, many years later, it has been certified 18 times platinum, which means it sold over 18 million copies in the United States.
Okay.
It's the 11th best-selling album ever, or at least it was at the time. It's also the best-selling debut album of all time. So the best-selling, like, first album by anybody. And then worldwide sales were close to $30 million copies. It sold about 30 million copies worldwide. And so for, like, a hard rock kind of album, like metal-ish album, that's super impressive. The other thing I thought was pretty cool was that when it was issued, when it was in formats that had, like, two sides, like an album, like a physical album, mm-hmm. or a cassette, when you had to flip them, normally there's an A side and a B side.
Yeah.
And they're called, like, the B sides. I totally forgot about this, but I remembered it when I saw it. The two sides were labeled the G side and the R side.
Whoa.
So, like, the Guns N' Roses sides. And the G side were all the songs that dealt with, like, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, sort of. And then the Roses side were sort of the love ones. Or really, the G side were more the drugs and rock and roll. And the Roses side were love and sex and relationships and stuff.
Oh,
and so,
cool.
If you look, when we talk through them a little bit, we'll talk through them in the order that they're on the tracks. You'll see that, like, the first six or so are the Guns songs, Welcome to the Jungle, and stuff like that. And then the other side are more of the My Michelle and Think About You, like, relationship songs.
Yeah.
So instead of being all, like, spaced out evenly through the album, it's all of one type in one place and all of one type in the second half.
So it sounds like...
I thought that was pretty cool.
So it was, like, two albums.
Sort of two albums, yeah.
Huh,
yeah, cool. Two EPs.
So yeah,
two mini albums, yeah? All right, so if we're going to start with Guns N' Roses, I was going to say, too, that, you know, there are certain audio cues that you have in your life when, like, for me, the big one is when you're sitting in the movie theater for a Star Wars movie and the score, like, starts and the credit crawl happens. Gosh. Like, there's something, like, super powerful about that. And I hadn't listened to this album in forever, but I learned that these opening notes, like, really struck me in a similar way whenever I hear the... Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, that was a really great opening for the album. Like, it's the first notes of Welcome to the Jungle, which was the first track that really made them famous. That's the first track on the album, so the whole album starts that way. And so when you hear that, you just sort of shift into this mindset of being ready to hear Appetite for Destruction. It's such an amazing, like, that song, like, in particular. Like, a lot of people sort of say... It's difficult to talk about whether it's a great album or whether there's a couple of really great songs on it, Sweet Child of Mine and Appetite for Destruction, that just so overpower everything else that you fondly remember it as a great album, even though there's some sort of duds on it. But the opening notes to that, I think, are actually really remarkable.
Yeah.
But so this was about you listening to it and reading the lyrics for the first time. So let's talk a little bit about what your thoughts were overall.
Okay. Overall, the whole album?
Yeah, let's start overall, and then we'll go into tracks.
Cool. I really liked it, actually. It's not the kind of music that I, like, normally listen to.
It's not really the kind of music anybody normally listens to anymore, I think.
But
that's fair.
It's actually, it's a really good album. I will say that because of listening to it on YouTube, a lot of my YouTube mixes are now filled with it.
Oh, so I bet that's true. Yeah, I bet it changed what your recommendations are.
Yeah, I keep changing my recommendations for listening to it. That's why I like assigning albums to you, though, because it will come up more often in my feed. And I'm like,
I'll have to just listen to them on your account so that I don't have to worry about that as much.
No, on my account or the account that I listen to music on. I used to do music on the Active Games account. So.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
Cool. Anyway, it's actually a really good album. I really, really like the guitar in this album. It makes me want to be able to play guitar.
Yeah, so Slash, like, that's certainly, he's one of the most well-known pieces of the band for good reason, right? Slash is a pretty phenomenal guitar player. So,
right?
Part of the thing, too, was that when you see him with the big hat and the big hair, like, he probably can't even see his guitar. And so he's playing kind of blind when he plays, and that makes it all the more impressive. So, yeah, Slash is pretty remarkable as a guitar player. And very bluesy. We kind of, last week when we were talking about Imagine Dragons, I was saying when they went into the blues types riff, that was more my thing. And so this is very blues based hard rock or metal. And so, yeah, that was definitely
my
genre.
Cool.
Yeah, so keep going.
It's definitely like so much more complex than the music now.
Yeah.
So much more. And we were talking about
this.
Because there's like two bridges.
Yep.
Like two guitar solo, like a short guitar solo and a long guitar solo.
Yep.
Like nearly every verse is different, except for a couple songs. Right. There's one song where it's one verse over and over again.
Sure.
But,
structurally, it seems like
different.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, I've been trying to figure out for a while why music now is so repetitive. And I think it's because back then, the whole piece was like not necessarily built around anything but itself. It was the whole thing, the whole song, like the guitar solo and like everything is part of the big song, while music now is sort of built around having something repetitive and easy to listen to until you get to the bridge.
Yeah, right.
That's what music now.
The hook.
Yeah,
that makes sense. No, I think, too, part of it, and I don't know how true this is, but as I was thinking about it for this podcast, I think that the bands before were a little bit more like peer musicians, and so it wasn't like one dominant creative force in the band, and that person sort of wrote things that suited their taste and their skill set and what they did. It was more like Axl would come up with some lyrics and a thing that he wanted to do, and then like Slash would really write the guitar parts, and Steven Adler would do the drum. Like, people would do their pieces, and you would kind of step back and let each person shine a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, hey, we need to let Slash have his moment in this song, so we're going to do a guitar solo. And then, like, if you go to the concerts, there were like huge drum solos. It looks like song length drum solos. It was very rare for that to make it to the album, but everybody kind of got their little time to shine and do those kinds of things. Whereas I think today it feels a little bit more like bands are driven by
the singer.
Not even if it's the singer, but like one person is really the creative force behind the band. And I wonder if that changed things. Like, guitar solos have obviously just kind of gone out of vogue. It's not a thing. So much less two
really
per
weird.
Song. You don't really have them anymore. A lot of songs, like especially stuff you listen to, there's not a lot of heavy guitar in them anyway, much less like a guitar solo. But yeah, I think structurally, and it's not that Guns N' Roses was, you know, super creative in their song structure. That was sort of formulaic. Like, I can show you 20 other bands, and it still kind of follows the same bridges and mini solo and outro and intro, and it changes in pace and things like that. It's a pretty common thing. But it is interesting to listen to these two things back to back and see how stark the difference is in the complexity of the songs. As opposed to the lack of complexity of the lyrics, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But yeah, I definitely actually really liked it. We've listened to it like several times just in the car and stuff. And I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it's actually a pretty cool album, and it's really interesting for me. Like, obviously, I love history and I love comparing society a while ago to society now. And it's cool to see the differences in, like, music, because music says a lot about the current state of society.
Interesting. I have to think about how reflective of society Guns N' Roses was, but it's probably, you know, not a horrible reflection of society.
Yeah, because everyone was listening to it, apparently.
It was big. And if you look at, you know, I also looked at something that was like the top 100 selling albums of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
This is maybe number 4. It's like way up there, right? And to get to something else that is in the genre of sort of hard rock kind of stuff, heavy metal ish. You get up in like the 60s and 70s. There's nobody else in this type of music that sort of jumped up this high, and like it really hit a nerve. Like, I don't know, maybe it was like one of the things I saw argued that it was a little bit counterculture, that, you know, in the 80s we had like this big anti-drug movement and AIDS was becoming a big thing, so sort of the sex part of sex, drugs, and rock and roll was very taboo, and like those things kind of shifted a little bit, the conversation around those things shifted, and then these guys came in and sort of were back to sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and who cares.
Yeah.
And that hit a nerve with some group of people, and that it really exploded because of that. Yeah.
Sweet.
All right, let's talk about some songs.
Woo.
You want to just go through the set list?
Yes.
So on the Guns side, it opens obviously with Welcome to the Jungle, like we just talked about.
Woo.
Which is one of the most famous tracks. And really, like I said, that's the one that made them famous.
Yes.
What were your thoughts on Welcome to the
Jungle?
It's
a good song. They are yelling.
A lot of yelling.
One of my other thoughts I have like written down on the whole band is, how do their vocal cords do that? They're yelling the whole time.
Yeah, Axl. So this is the other thing. So a lot of times in a band, you have like one person. It's hard enough to find one person that's really a gifted musician, mm-hmm. right, and performer. And then that's why a lot of times you have a band that there's just one guy and he's amazing, or girl, and the band sort of, they find people to compliment them, mm-hmm. so that they can perform because they're amazing. Guns N' Roses really had two. Axl vocally was just as powerful and great a performer as Slash was on guitar, mm-hmm. and that's pretty rare. The other guys are really good at what they do, but they don't stand out, and they're not like a, oh my god, like Axl's vocal range and his ability to be all gravelly and screamy and stuff without ruining his voice,
yeah.
was remarkable. And there's some stuff, I'll have to find some clips, I've heard some really cool clips of him like singing a cappella, and it's really amazing. Like, he really was a talented singer. There's no doubt. Yeah, and this song shows it pretty well, I thought.
Yeah.
Sweet. Go ahead, what's next? Or what else do you think about Welcome?
I think one of the things that was on Genius Lyrics that I wrote down, mm-hmm. is that Welcome to the Jungle was supposedly the first thing someone said to Axl when he arrived in Los Angeles,
yeah.
for the first time.
Yep.
And
an apocryphal story of the... Yeah.
I thought that was really cool that the song was built around that.
It sounds like... I thought they corrected it, though, like in a Rolling Stones interview at some point. They say it was said to him, I think, but I don't think it was like right when he was dropped off. I think it was like on Skid Row or something. Some guys, you're gonna die, because there's that line, "Welcome to the jungle, you're gonna die."
Yeah,
and he said somebody said that, like some homeless guy said that to him in Hollywood or something like that. I think was the Rolling Stones interview version of where
it
that
says,
came from.
On here, it was also on Genius Lyrics that. When he hitchhiked to Los Angeles, mm-hmm. on the last leg, a truck driver drove him, and when he got out of the truck driver said,
"Yeah,
welcome to the jungle."
I think it's probably true that someone said that to him. The exact circumstances under which he heard it, it's probably open for debate. But yeah, that's a pretty cool story. And this is the jungle. Like we now live in the jungle. Probably a little less jungly than where he moved when he hitchhiked here. But yeah, L.A. is definitely the jungle. I've got one of my favorite lyrics in here. They kind of go together, but one is. You can taste the bright lights, but you won't get them for free.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, you have to work for what you're going to get out here. Like, you have the opportunity to make it and sort of be big and explode and do what you want to do, but you got to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have anything you want, but you better not take it from me. Like, I thought that was really cool. Like, you wish success for everyone until they become your competitors.
Yeah.
And if you view people as a competitor and you think, are you familiar with, like, zero-sum game? You know what that means? Like, if you're playing a game where, like, your goal is to collect tokens, mm-hmm. let's say, and there are 10 tokens in the game, and whoever gets the most tokens wins.
Right? Yeah.
So that's a zero-sum game. There are 10 tokens. Somebody, in order for me to get enough tokens to win, you have to lose.
Right.
Right. So that's a zero, like somebody wins, somebody loses kind of thing.
Okay.
And fame and success and things like that aren't necessarily zero sum games,
mm-hmm.
because there's kind of enough to go around, but people treat them as if they are.
Yeah.
And so when you start suddenly get in this, I'm working hard, everybody has an opportunity to succeed. Like, the message of the song is everybody can do it. But then you sort of say, well, you can have anything you want, but you better not take it from me. Like, now it's a competition. Now that I'm succeeding, your success hinders my success. And so I'm going to attack you. And we see that a lot in different media circles that we're in. We see people kind of can get competitive around success and feel like, mm-hmm. success is a zero-sum game. And in order for you to succeed, it hurts my chance to succeed. Yeah. And so while I sort of root for you to succeed, I really don't, because I want to succeed instead. Mm-hmm. Like, people don't think about the fact that we could both succeed.
I know.
People think about one or the other of us will, and that means I need you to not so that I can. But that's a real thing. I mean, that happens a lot, and people certainly have those impressions. So I thought that was kind of a nice lyric. So yeah. one of the things that we'll see, I think, as we go through all these lyrics is that we're not going to have a lot of the subtlety conversation that we had with Imagine Dragons. There's not a ton of subtlety in the lyrics. They're pretty direct.
They just say things.
Yeah, you can have anything you want, but you better not take it from me. I mean, that's a pretty direct, there's no references to King Midas and the allegory of Midas. It's just, yeah, you can. It's totally cool if you want to succeed too, but don't do it at my expense. And he just blatantly says that. So it's a little more straightforward and explicit, which I thought was. Parts of me thinks it's pretty cool. Parts of me thinks that it's a little on the nose, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
One of the lyrics that, this is my last note on the song, is that it stood out to me as relatable, is "Welcome to the jungle, it gets worse here every day."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
No, that's
much.
A good one. Yeah, so there is a little bit of, and we'll see as the track goes on, right? This is, in a lot of ways, this is the anti-smoke and mirrors. because Welcome to the Jungle is the, hey, we just got here and we're just now starting to figure out and fight for our fame and get where we need to be, right? And it just gets worse every day, and it sucks a little more out of you every day as you're fighting through it and doing that kind of thing, mm-hmm. right? Which I think I liked. I thought it was a cool thing. That's a good line. That is a good line.
Yes,
I totally agree.
And then the next song, that's highlighted even more.
Yeah, next song is It's So Easy, which is you're starting to build a name for yourself. You're starting to become a little bit famous, maybe. And now, it's so easy. Like, it's so easy when everybody's trying to please me. Like, that's the lyric, right? And so when everybody is, you're successful and everybody's trying to glom onto your success and get something from you, or they want to just have some of that success rub off of them, on them, then your life gets pretty easy.
Yeah.
Which is totally the opposite of how much it suck to be rich and famous, right? Which I think is really cool. I like that aspect. And that's actually a pretty good, I like the rhythm of the song. I like it's a little bit different than Welcome to the Jungle musically too. So I love this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have other things from this one?
I have just a few lines that stood out.
Yep.
So there's one that is, I make the fire, but I miss the firefight.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Which I thought that was really cool.
Yep.
I really like that.
I agree.
And then, the last line has a swear in it. I don't know if I should say that,
we'll bleep it.
Okay, and then the last line in the song, I'm pretty sure it's the last line at least, is why don't you just And I'm like, yeah, same.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Me all the time.
There's definitely a lot of explicit flags in this album.
Yeah. There's one song on the entire album without an explicit
flag.
There
may be more than one, but it's pretty close.
No, I think there's just one because we were looking at it.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
A lot of explicitness.
Okay, cool. Let's switch over to Night Train.
Do
you have another
bunch of songs?
Oh, did we?
Yeah, it goes, at least in my list, it goes, maybe I put it down. Never mind, I put it down there in the notes.
Okay.
I'm fine.
All right, so Night Train, third track. We're selling the guns. So I liked I'm a Molotov Cocktail with a Match to Go. I've got a Molotov Cocktail with a Match to Go. I smoke my cigarettes in style. That's a cool line. And it goes back to, again, we're like going back to common themes in rock and roll and themes that were in Imagine Dragons. I'm a stick of dynamite. I'm the color of boom. So this is, again, like the artistic nature of language. Here you've got Axl saying, I've got a Molotov Cocktail with a Match to Go. Like, mm-hmm. that's a pretty clear thing, right? And then Imagine Dragons' interpretation of that is, I'm the color of boom.
Right.
Which is a little more, you know, metaphorical and subtle.
Right, they have a few more lyrics about that, which is a little bit more literal.
They have some more things that are on the nose, right? But I'm the color of boom definitely popped up as one of the things I thought was a super funny way to do that, as opposed to a Molotov cocktail, like the explicitness of
Molotov cocktails are really, I remember them in Last of Us very specifically.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I know.
Definitely
about
a big part of Last of Us.
They're really cool.
Sweet. All right, what
cool
else you got?
Beans.
You got other stuff for Night Train?
I really liked, like, the vibe of this song.
Okay.
I don't know how to describe it properly, but it gives, like, a really cool image in your head of, like, the vibe the song is giving off. Like, I just want to see dark blue, which is a weird thing.
Well, this one's obviously super drug.
Yeah, it's
heavy,
about drugs.
Right? Yeah, we're on the drug side for sure. And so this is their metaphorical language, right? I'm loaded like a freight train. And so, let's say C- for metaphor. for using the word loaded. And then the next line is flying like an airplane. So that, again,
a little bit better.
Well, maybe a C. Still not fantastic. Feeling like a... what's the...
Night brain?
No, it's like an air brain or something like that.
Something brain?
Yeah, it's like an air brain. Not an air brain, but something like that. That is like a fuzzy headedness of you. They're all like drug references, obviously, right? I'm on the night train, right?
This song...
not super subtle, but good. Yeah, like, I kind of liked it. Right?
I had a dream about drugs after this song.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. We'll talk about that off the podcast.
It was really weird. It didn't make any sense.
Sweet. It's all right. Let's talk about Out to Get Me.
All the way back up. Okay. Okay. Out to Get Me.
Yep.
This is another really good song. Wait. I got a Molotov cocktail with a match to go is in Out
it's
to Get
true.
Me for me. Huh.
Is
well,
it?
It's in my section. I might have gotten that wrong.
Yeah, okay.
Who knows?
Whichever one it was in. All the comments apply.
Still cool.
Yeah, yeah.
It says, at least if this isn't Out to Get Me, I have more of the line, which is, I'm a nine lives cat. I got a dog eat dog smile.
Sly smile.
Mm. I got a Molotov cocktail with a match to go. Mm. And I thought that was just...
I think that's night
really
train.
Really cool. Yeah. Well, that's my night train note then.
Yep, there you go. It was in the right place, just the wrong song.
And that was really, really cool. I really like Out to Get Me. I like the very extremely clear rebelliousness of this song.
No doubt.
It says it right there.
Yeah, right. Well, this is also like Axl in his younger days having like problems with the local police.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, right? In sort of smallish town.
Right. And
dealing with the local police.
In Genius that just because he was like dressing very rock starish that the police automatically assumed he was doing a crime.
Yeah, you got the whole West Memphis 3 effect going on. But don't worry. Well, you need to watch that though. It's fantastic.
I mean, that's your next assignment. Who knows?
The one lyric I thought was really funny though was, they won't get me because I'm innocent. And I'm like, I don't think that's how that works. I'm not sure. Like, there's this is the same time period too. Actually, I'll have to look and see when it came out. But the Fugitive movie with Harrison Ford has one of my favorite lines in all of movie dome. We'll have to watch it at some point. But so Tommy Lee Jones is this cop guy. I can't remember if he's U.S. Marshals or whoever. Mm-hmm. But he's out. Harrison Ford like escapes from prison, and Tommy Lee Jones is assigned with tracking him down, and in a really great role for Tommy Lee Jones. And at one point, Tommy Lee Jones tracks him down, and he's in this like sewer system kind of thing.
Oh, fun.
And running, and Tommy Lee Jones finally catches up to him, and Harrison Ford says, I didn't do it. And Tommy Lee Jones' response is, I don't care. Right. Like, it's not my job. Like, I am not the one that decides whether you're guilty or not guilty. My job is to catch you and take you in. And so it's just such a great moment where Harrison Ford is like, I didn't do it. Like, really passionately. Like, I didn't do it. And Tommy Lee Jones is like, I don't care. Like, you still have to come with me.
Right.
Like, I have nothing to do with that. And so, yeah, it's not, they can't catch me because I'm innocent. Like,
that's just not a fundamental misunderstanding
of the process. I thought that was super funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, not one of my favorite songs, I think, but it's not bad.
Yeah.
Although Mr. Brownstone is one of my favorite songs.
Oh, yes.
So that's the next song, and we're still in the drug phase.
Yowza.
It does say Yowza.
They say it has Yowza with an S in Genius, which bothers me.
Does it really? Yeah.
Yowza has a Z.
Yeah, that seems to be not what you would expect to see.
A Yowza.
And it's got one of the refrains in that repeats is, I used to do a little, but a little wouldn't do it, so the little got more and more.
Really, yeah.
Again, not super subtle.
Not really.
But a really good line, right? Like building up an immunity to heroin, basically, is what he's talking about, to drugs in general. But it applies in all of sort of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle. The things that I used to do a little, and it was really extreme, and I thought it was really cool and awesome, but then I got bored with that, and so I had to ramp it up a little bit. Mm. And that happens with drugs and with everything else kind of in the extreme lifestyles, where it takes more and more. And then I love the, I get up around whatever. Like, I think that's a great line. Like, it starts off with, I get up around 7 and get out of bed around 9. Like, that's a thing, right? But then later, I get up around whenever. And it's sort of going into more of the drug stuff. Like, now I don't even have a schedule. I can't maintain a schedule. Mm-hmm. And I've gone so far down the thing. But I get up around whenever, so that's a good line.
Huh. Yeah. My notes on this is, like, it's about drugs, but it also, like, works for depression. Like, mm-hmm. When I was first hearing it, I was like, is this about depression?
Yeah.
Because it sounded so much, like, just, like, about being depression, like, because it starts out with, literally something happened this morning, by the way, but I wasn't being depressed when I woke up, I was on my phone. Like, he gets up around 7, and he gets out of bed at 9, and then he does a schedule, like a normal person, and then he gets up, and then, like, it's just... You don't feel motivated.
No, that's an excellent observation.
It seems like there's about depression.
Well, but, I mean, I don't know. Like, being addicted to certain kinds of drugs is probably a lot like depression.
Yeah.
Right?
It might be because of depression.
There are probably some similarities in the behavior there as well. That's an excellent insight, Presley. I hadn't even thought about that.
Cool.
I have to go back and listen to it. Like, Mr. Brownstone being depression instead of heroin would probably, this song would probably work just as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. I love it. Let's go Paradise City.
Iconic.
Totally. This was one of the other major tracks. So, Welcome to the Jungle, Paradise City, and Sweet Child of Mine, the big songs. It's also interesting. I think Paradise City was the last of the G songs.
Okay.
And it's kind of an interesting bridge between the G and the R song. It's kind of hard where are you going to put it? Is it going to be a Gun song or a Roses song? And so I think it kind of bridges the gap a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What I love about this one, we talked about a couple of times when we were listening to it, I love that it does the same thing. So it's repetitive in nature, but it does it at three different speeds.
Yeah.
Like, there's the slow acoustic-y intro, and then the main song, and then at the end when they get to kind of the mosh pit version, it's going a lot faster, but it's the same thing, the same chord progression, the same lyrics. It just ramps at these three different speeds throughout the song. I thought that was fantastic. I loved listening to this one again.
It's just a song, and then it's just a song, and then it ramps up to the nightcore version of the song.
It's a little Freebird-y in that way.
Hmm.
Freebird kind of does some of that stuff. It ramps up and does. Yeah.
Here it is.
What did you think about Paradise City other than it being iconic?
I mean, like, yeah.
Had you heard Paradise City?
Totally. I've heard it many times before.
Does that one get used in AMVs?
In Edgy Warrior Cats AMVs. It's not the kind of song that would be used in Edgy Warrior Cats AMVs.
Right.
I'm really surprised. Like, maybe my audience isn't the people that experienced 2008 Warrior Cat AMVs.
I just thought that was
part of being on the internet is going through Edgy Warriors phase.
Well, people can certainly let us know if they're familiar with the Edgy Warrior Cats AMVs.
Because those were such an iconic part of existence.
We'll link to a couple of them in the comments from the YouTube video, at least. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can look in the comments and see some of Presley's favorites Warrior Cat AMVs.
Alright, but yes, I really like the lyrics in one, and like you mentioned, I like the speed of changing.
Yep.
And one of the lyrics I liked, like, obviously I like the chorus because it's cool, but one of the lyrics I liked is, Captain America's been torn apart, now he's a court jester with a broken heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I like that. That's
nice.
A good lyric.
So one of the things I was going to ask you is, do you think Paradise City is the same place as the jungle?
Ooh.
Or do you think that their life has changed over the course of that G side of the album? When he first got here, it was the jungle, and they fought and worked their way up to success, and now the same place for them is Paradise City.
I thought they were singing about, like, honestly, when I first heard this, mm-hmm. I thought they were singing about where they came from before they got to the jungle.
Yeah, and that's entirely possible.
It says, like, take me home.
Yeah, do they want to go back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now they've gotten so wrapped up in it, they want to go back.
Right. And I might be reading into this a little bit, but it's partially, which was also mentioned in Red Rising, your memory of something is so much better than what it actually is. Yeah, Polaroid, Red Rising, all of that stuff.
You'll notice there's a lot of themes in rock albums. Or really, there are few that get used a lot.
Yeah. And I thought it was, like, just because of, like, the memories being distorted, like, the grass is greener where they came from, and the girls are prettier because I thought that was a comment on how Hollywood girls are so fake.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of attitude, which I don't like.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I always thought of it more as the jungle became home to them.
Yeah,
and then
they
would be on the road, traveling and touring and in some other country or in some other city playing some arena show, and they would want to go home. And home being the jungle. I think either of them work.
I thought that was really cool.
Totally,
I like
either
that
of them
interpretation
work.
Better than mine.
So when they're on the road, they want to go home. But home is now the jungle, this place that used to be this horrible, dangerous place to them. But now that's just home.
Yeah.
Sweet.
That's
all right.
Cool.
Let's go to the Roses side.
Woo.
My Michelle.
Yes. This song is, as you said, a lot more misogynistic than you remember it being.
This whole album is a lot more misogynistic. Like, this shows as much as anything, for me at least, how much times have changed. Because, like, I was super into this album, and I didn't, like, I knew there were some of the things. I was like, wow, that's kind of tough.
Nasty.
But now, like, listening to it, I'm like, oh my God, I listened to this when I was like 14? Holy cow. There's This is super, super misogynistic kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so this is obviously one of the misogynistic songs. Yep.
Oh, boy. It has... Okay, so you can say the lyric that we mentioned every time we listen to it, which is, like, I think the first one, but whatever.
Oh, like the intro?
Yes.
Yeah, so your daddy works in porno. Now that mommy's not around, she used to love her heroin, but now she's underground.
Yay! Yeah, that's... pleasant. What a great time.
Lovely imagery. And I also learned that he actually wrote this for a real person.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this is sort of, like,
I'm
based
sorry,
on...
person.
And it was apparently... Again, this is very apocryphal, so I don't know if this is true or not. This is just one of the stories floating around. But, like, this girl that was a friend of his that they knew, like, really wanted him to write a song for her and about her. And so he wrote that.
Oh, no.
And that's not exactly what she was kind of expecting it to be. And, like, she came, I think, to accept it and sort of it reflected, like, a real thing and was kind of awesome. But I think, like, people know who the song's about. And so she got a bunch of stuff about, had some hard times about the song being about her and stuff. But,
that's
she was like, oh, hey, Axel, write me a song. And he's like, okay.
And then he does this.
Here you go. And then, wait a minute. That's not exactly what I meant.
Oh, no. But
at least he put her on the roses side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the lyrics that I liked, which is actually, like, very relatable for me, which is at the end of, like, the intro part, it is driving your friends crazy with your life's insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, like, very relatable to me because, obviously, we have a very busy and very insane life.
Right.
And I feel like sometimes if I didn't compartmentalize.
Oh, compartmentalize. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. I can't say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. No, no.
I
compartmentalize. Yes, you do compartmentalize, for sure.
If I didn't do that so much, I feel like it would kind of drive my friends crazy with how much stuff I have going on.
Yeah. Instead, it just drives us crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. We're part of it.
We're that
you're
compartment.
In this.
Yeah, we're definitely in it. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Okay, sweet. Let's go think about you.
Think about you. This is a love. My note on this. One of my notes on this song is love song, but they yell.
It's the hard rock love song.
They're just yelling.
Yeah, there's lots of yelling, but they also go in the background, which is super funny.
Yeah,
I feel so bad for those guys.
That is so funny.
I don't know. I don't either, but it's super, super funny. When you listen to the chorus of that, you can hear the background guys having to do their their doo-wop band impersonation in the back, which I thought was fantastic.
It's amazing.
Because you know, Axel just came into the studio that day. He's like, okay, I just need you guys to go, and I'll sing over that. It'll be awesome. Right?
Yeah,
I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I think this is cool. And then actually, the last few lines of this song, which is sort of like comes across to me just because of what I'm gonna assign you.
Okay.
Like comes across to me as very relating to Monica from Doki Doki Literature Club, which is what I'm going to give you today.
Okay.
And the last lyric, so I'm thinking about you, only about you, like only about you, nothing but you.
Right.
And that game has sort of given that a very different tone because from like a lyric standpoint, I think what it's supposed to be about is I'm so in love with you, I can only think about you.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For those of you, I'm not going to spoil it, but for those of you who do know Doki Doki Literature Club, you know the vibe that gives me now.
Right. Okay, we'll find out next week.
Woo!
All right, sweet child of mine.
Oh, mine.
Another iconic song from this album.
It's Sweet Child O' Mine.
And like, again, those three songs, Welcome to the Jungle, Paradise City, and Sweet Child O' Mine, really carry this album. Right?
Yeah.
They're such great classic songs that they really, they totally carry the thing. And as we referenced last week, this song contains my favorite lyric in all of Musicdom. Do you want to say it or should I say
it? I'll say it because I have it in my notes.
Yeah, no, please go.
Her hair reminds me of a warm, safe place where as a child I'd hide.
Like, I love it.
What does it mean?
I love it.
What
and so my, I just love it. I could not love that lyric anymore. I think that in my mind, I have this mental image of like Axel as a little kid, like they're driving around as a family and they're, whenever they stop in like a public restroom, like a truck stop or something like that, he's just collecting hair out of the drains and he's building himself this little human hair nest. That is his safe place that he hides in. And so now that he's older and he's in this relationship, he sees this girl and he's like, oh, that's like my hair nest that I used to have when I was a kid.
Why is that your image?
I can't say why. It just is because it's awesome.
Why?
Because, like, how else do you explain that lyric?
Because, like, I was thinking her hair
was. That's not
was
what
like,
you were thinking?
No, I was thinking her hair looked like was blonde or something, and then there was like a little bush that you would go under. like the bush, and it's like, yes, that's a little bit more understandable than a hair nest.
It's like this bush I used to hide in. Yeah. So, yeah, either way, it's a phenomenal, like, it's a phenomenal lyric.
I also, like, when I was listening to this, because this song comes on radio here a lot, very much.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
the whole album's This is the Jungle, so yeah. They like to play that here.
And I used to think it was Once Safe Place, which I think is cool.
I think Once Safe Place is better.
I think Once Safe Place is really cool.
But I think his little hair nest would have been really warm, too.
So. I hate you so much. Why is that your interpretation of this song?
Well, now whenever you hear this song, that's what you're going to think about. Is that little baby Axel in his hair nest.
That's so
in the back of the bus.
It's like his mom's chilling out. Something.
I don't know. It's really funny.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Okay, let's plow ahead. We're getting close to halfway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you have more about Sweet Child?
Nope.
You can't say any more about it than that one lyric.
Yeah, no.
That's all that exists in that song. That's all you need to know. Okay.
Do you think it's actually... It's slightly creepy comparing your lover to a child and being like, yes, this is a child. I'm like, huh.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
And that just makes me uncomfortable as a person. That's not about, like, this song.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
anyway.
Fair. Okay.
You're crazy. This song is just, it's another yelling song.
It is.
They're yelling a lot.
It's a yelling love song.
They're just yelling.
This is yelling on the Roses side of the album.
They're just yelling.
Sweet. All right, what do you got on this one?
But they're not necessarily, like, yelling about love. They're yelling about, like, a manipulative partner.
Yeah, they're almost yelling about the opposite of love, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The line I've got here is, you don't want my love, you want satisfaction.
That's my line too. Oh, no.
Do you have that one? Yeah. Because that's excellent, right? Like,
yeah.
You want something from me, and you think it's love, but it's not.
Yeah.
Like, you... And this is all... Man, I'm going to regret saying this. This is almost like... throws back a little bit to the John Green review that we did yesterday, right?
Oh, uh-huh.
Where, like, you want me to be the story that you're telling about me,
mm-hmm.
right? You want to get, you know, your own satisfaction out of this relationship, whether or not that's where I am in the relationship kind of thing. You want to change who I am.
Right.
And I think that's an interesting, you don't want my love, you want satisfaction.
Why is that a regrettable thing to say? That's just understandable.
Well, because I feel bad comparing Guns N' Roses lyrics to John Green's writing.
Well, like, everything is connected.
Yeah. There's only 10 stories. We just keep telling them again and again.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And I just, and this one again, with my weird notes, I just wrote bravado.
Do you understand that?
Well, I think that it is a lot of, this may be part of my differences between Imagine Dragons and Guns N' Roses. Like, mm-hmm. Guns N' Roses is full of bravado. Like, we deserve to be here. We earned this.
Yeah.
It's awesome to be a rock god kind of thing. And Imagine Dragons is much more
it
of
sucks.
A, like a, you know, Gen X, Gen Z, whatever interpretation of.
Right.
Yeah, it's horrible and lonely to be rich, to be a rock god.
About that more.
So the difference between being, like, loving being a rock god and being tortured by being a rock god is definitely a generational thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
All right. Time for Anything Goes, which I like to call this song all of the vibes of Big Fun with all of the uncomfortableness of Dead Girl Walking. That's what I call this song in my head. Because, and yes, those are Heather's songs.
I knew most
of those
words.
Don't know.
Yeah.
They're Heather. You've listened to Heather's.
No, I have listened to Heather's.
Okay. Big Fun is the one where they're, where they're having a party and everyone's like, woohoo, party!
Sure.
And then Dead Girl Walking is the one that makes everyone really uncomfortable.
Yeah. I like to call this song the Hardcore Fish Thing song.
Hardcore fish thing.
Which is it's called a guiro. I learned that. It's the little fish that you scrape in music class.
Yeah, this song.
Yeah, that's this song. Like, at the intro of this song, like, there's this, like, I think Axel just came into the studio one day and is like, you remember that, like, fish thing that we used to play in seventh grade in music class? I want to use that on a track, but I want to make it, like, all hardcore.
Right, and then in another song, they have a whistle. So it makes me think.
Yeah, Paradise City has a whistle.
Yeah, it makes me think that they're, like, recording studio is in, like, a sixth grade music classroom.
Well, they use a lot of interesting percussion stuff in different places, but, like, this one was the most interesting, the little guiro. I hope it was fish shaped. Like, they don't have to be, but in my head, again, like, it was definitely the two little holes in the bottom and Steven Adler is playing the fish shaped
guiro. The ones we had in class were just like, well, what's that shape called? It's like Wait, what is that shape called? A tube.
A tube.
It was
a
just
cylinder.
A tube. Yeah. Just a cylinder. Well,
but you can shape it to where it's like a fish, and it kind of goes away. Yeah. Like the ones that you play a lot were fish ones, and there's frog ones
and stuff.
My best friend
has a frog one. I like the frog one.
That's all. That's all this song is to me is the fish shaped thing. Hardcore song.
A hardcore fish shaped thing.
Yeah.
I just like this is the song I was talking about where they just say anything goes tonight over and over and over and over.
So this like this the album definitely starts fading out for me after Sweet Child. Like in quality.
Right? Yeah. But they're just like repeating it. And like when I first heard this song, I wasn't hearing the lyrics. So my like big thing was just like, this song is big fun. But now that I hear the lyrics, I'm like, huh, Dead Girl Walking.
Definitely a party song.
Yes. Not the reprise, the first one.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rocket Queen.
Last song on the album, Rocket Queen.
Ooh, okay. I wrote down, I think this is one extremely long bit of lyric that I liked.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I've got a tongue like a razor, a sweet switchblade knife, which I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, in music that I listen to, there's a lot of, my tongue is a weapon.
Yeah.
And now I have a song that says that stuck in my head.
Yeah.
But that's a lot in a lot of music, because in a way, your music is your weapon. Barred. they're being bards, and yeah, understandable. And then the other one is, no one needs the sorrow, no one needs the pain. I hate to see you walking out there in the rain. I thought that was, because like this song starts with like almost singing about using her and her body and that kind of stuff, and then it switches into at the very end, like singing about having like being emotionally attached to her and not wanting to see her be hurt, and I thought that was cool.
And this is a real person too. Rocket Queen is a real person here in LA back in the days, and she was real young too. But she was one of the like centers of the heavy metal rock scene here in LA. I think I got this written as my least favorite song I think on the album. And I don't remember all the voice modulation at all. It was kind of it was really obvious and sort of heavy handed in the mix and intentionally so, I assume. But I don't remember that being a thing on this album, and I don't remember much about this song. So this was, like I said, after Sweet Child of Mine, it sounds like I just turned the tape off. I don't remember a ton about these last few songs, so I think these kind of faded out for me. But I love the album, right?
Yeah.
And this was a huge important album in my like early high school days, I think, is when I was listening to this.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got to listen to it. And it was different than I thought it was going to be. But yeah, you liked it, yeah?
Yeah, I did like it.
Yeah. I think now that we bought a new copy of it, obviously digitally to do this study, so I think I'll listen to it a little bit more.
And
we'll keep listening to it. I worked out to it last night. It was actually pretty good.
Oh, cool.
It's a good workout album for sure.
Yeah, sweet. I can see that, because they're just, like, very much yelling. It's like what you're talking about with Imagine Dragons, where they're songs that are meant to be played over, like, movie credits, because just a wall of sound.
It's got to be loud. It's got to be, totally agree.
That's cool.
Sweet. All right, we're gonna try something new here. We're going to try and do our little middle of the podcast thing, like, live.
Actually in the middle of the podcast.
Yeah.
Whoa,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So that it gets on the YouTube channel and everything else, too, right? So I've even got a little segue to that the people who listen to the podcast have heard, but everybody's heard it probably, but the people who listen to the podcast have heard it in this context, though the people maybe not, so... Sweet.
Woo.
All right. Welcome to the middle of the podcast. Here, take a step back. This works out where we're going to talk about between Guns N' Roses and Holy Grail. We're going to do some housekeeping kind of stuff here. We didn't do it at the beginning. So, Presley, you want to tell people how they can reach out to us and talk to us? There's three ways, I think, mostly.
I almost just said the first time stuff.
Please don't do the first time stuff. First time show.
Absolutely go listen to the first time. Yeah, but don't talk to us about...
Don't send them an email about us.
Anyway, you can find us at ValidateMeCast on Twitter and ValidateMePodcast@gmail.com. Send your thoughts and in the comments on the YouTube channel if you're watching this on the video podcast.
Yep.
Let us know what you think about Appetite for Destruction. Keep wanting to say the name of a different song, which is Appetite of a People Pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us about what you think about Appetite for Destruction and what you think about Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which we're about to talk about.
Yeah, lots of stuff coming up. So this time, I actually did remember to do some call-outs to some people who have commented. So both some Twitter stuff, an email, and some comments below. I do want to thank Brianna Angus, who was our first Twitter follower. I said subscriber, our first Twitter. Yay!
Angus McDonald!
Brianna Angus. And she remembered the flower on the back of the car fingerprint thing. She said she maybe saw it on TV show Unsolved kind of thing, which I think is awesome. Yeah, I maybe that story exists in multiple places, or maybe that was actually by the house where I lived. We also another Twitter follower is Frankie, our buddy.
Woo!
Frankie XL. We'll put links to these people's Twitter down in the description. Go check them out. Frankie's one of our favorite booktubers and a really good friend of the channel. We love her a lot.
Yes.
And she's doing it right, as I think our buddies over at First Time Show would say. She's doing the homework. So when Presley gave me my assignment at the end of the first one, and then I gave Presley's assignment back, Frankie went and did the homework. She probably listened to Appetite for Destruction and watched Holy Grail before this podcast, which is awesome. We love having her on. And so we may even have her come on and talk with us, and she's doing the homework and stuff. When the first time we decided to do a special guest, Frankie's on the short list for sure. Love her. And then Mandy, who's at A Little Dizzy on Twitter, is also a Twitter follower, and she is a big BuzzFeed Unsolved fan. She said it's taken over her fandom universe for right now, but she's more of a true crime person than a supernatural person.
I am.
So she's looking forward to me watching true crime.
Right. I just like supernatural because I all go to the locations. And I like seeing them interact with the locations.
They're funny. The dynamic of like one believer and one skeptic is funny on that. We'll see. I doubt that they have the same thing where Shane is like, I don't think anybody died here. It's probably not the same kind of dynamic.
No, it's like in true crime, Ryan likes to bring up like maybe it was aliens.
No,
and then Shane is like, no.
We'll see. Okay, and then some other comments that we got on YouTube. We've got 1966 Link Does YouTube, which is a great name, was the first person to remind me that it's called the Mandela Effect. Which was awesome because a lot of people thought that Nelson Mandela died in prison.
He didn't.
But
he died like years after.
He did not. And then Karasu the Dreamer. Oh, I meant to
do Karasu.
If you want to do Japanese, it's Karasu.
Karasu
the Dreamer asked, does Presley like the Bright Sessions? The Bright Sessions.
I have not heard
of
this.
And I meant to look that up
cool.
and take a look so that we could intelligently answer that question during this part of the podcast, but I forgot to do that.
The Bright spelled how?
B-R-I-G-H-T. We'll look it up. Don't look it up right now.
I'm typing it in my notes.
I've got it in a note sitting right in front of me.
Great.
And we're kind of doing something right now, so let's not go watch that. I've got the Axton's Rock. I want to go with that.
This is
funny because this is the person that said, I never thought of Brian as having a forename. And number one, I think forename is an awesome word. You talk about surnames a lot. You don't talk about forenames a lot. That's a great
forename.
Thing.
Forename.
Yeah.
You have a forename.
So, but yes, Presley's dad.
That is your name.
Yes, I am much more comfortable these days going by Presley's dad than I am going by Brian. So that's totally fine. And then Tabitha Plays was talking about Galaga and Pac-Man being mentioned in the Pixels as the movie Pixels.
Yeah.
The Pixels. Did I say the Pixels? Man, I'm totally turning into a dad. So Galaga and Pac-Man were mentioned in the movie Pixels as being all about memorizing the patterns and stuff like that. And I have not watched Pixels because I think it's probably horrible.
It is, apparently.
But I would love to hear Tabitha Plays if it was actually worth watching. If it is, then we'll definitely check it out.
I think it was I was on Tumblr when Pixels came out, and I remember my entire dash was, don't support Pixels.
Yeah, I haven't heard a lot of good feedback for it. But if it's worth watching, I'll check it out because certainly those are my generation games and stuff. And I love some of the people in it, for sure.
Yeah.
So that's a couple of shout-outs real quick. Some housekeeping. Your middle of the podcast break. Follow one of those things that Presley called out there if you want to reach out to us.
Yes.
And we'll read your stuff and talk about your stuff in the little mid-podcast break.
Yeah. Ooh, transition.
Yeah, transition. Okay, cool. Let's talk about
Monty
Python in the Holy Grail.
Yes.
I mean, this is unbelievable that you haven't seen Monty, but this is a...
I have seen it. I'm telling you,
I've seen
this movie
before. You've seen it. I don't think you've seen it. You didn't seem to remember a lot of the stuff.
I've seen the Knights of Knee Park. I've seen that at least.
Yeah, well, that's like a clip, right?
We are the knights who say... Knee!
I love the pauses. Like, they're really great pauses. So
right?
I'm just going to skip right to it. This is my other, like, pregnant pause that I love in the movie. Again, maybe my favorite pause of the movie. Maybe my favorite line of the movie.
There are some who call me... Tim.
Oh, that's so good. So good. One of the only Funkos that I ever actually bought for myself was Tim the Enchanter.
Do you still have Tim?
I do have him. He's around here somewhere.
Yay.
And he came with the bunny.
So
it was
Tim
the Enchanter and the Beast.
For death awaits you all with nasty big pointy teeth.
Maybe not that. Big.
And is it like the Scottish accent? And he gets called a git during part of the thing. And when they argue, it was really, really, really funny. So again, like listening to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and watching this movie will turn you in on a whole bunch of like inside jokes and references that people drop. Next time we walk around a con, you're gonna see this.
Just a flesh wound.
Like, oh,
that's
I've seen that before.
That's a
so
huge thing.
Times.
Like, you'll hear stuff about that a lot. This one I hear a lot.
In your general direction.
That's a big one for sure. You'll see t-shirts that have stuff referencing.
What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow?
So you'll hear a lot of swallow. There's really
Did
great shirts that have
calculate
like
that?
They mentioned it earlier in the movie what it is for a European swallow. But there's a really great line where they mention, or there's a t-shirt that has like two swallows with a string between them holding a coconut, because they talk about how it would take two European swallows with it. So that's all really great. I've got a lot of sort of comments in sort of random order. I'll throw one. We'll just take turns. We'll go back and forth. One I thought was really funny. This is you watching it for one of the first times and commenting. And based on some of the other stuff that we're doing, there was this. They were building the Trojan rabbit.
Oh, yeah. And forgot about that audio.
What was your comment about that?
About the Trojan rabbit?
You remember? Yeah, about them building it. You said it sounded like the Lost Monster.
Oh, my God.
They just showed like a scene of the woods, and the knight is up on the castle listening in the woods, and then you just hear that sound happening back in the background while they're working on it.
It does. It sounds like the Lost Monster.
It totally sounds like the Lost Monster. Since we're watching Lost now, I thought that was a super funny thing to see.
It does.
Okay, what do you give me one of your notes on
Monty Python? I was wondering, how spontaneous is this movie? This does not seem like they wrote a script for this movie.
Yeah, so they are,
like it just happened.
Monty Python are definitely, like, sketch comedians.
Yeah.
So they had the Flying Circus. Monty Python's Flying Circus was a sketch show, kind of like Saturday Night Live, right? And so you could tell this movie was, like, a lot of skits.
All
back
in
to
one.
Back to back that were like similarly themed, but not necessarily one huge movie. And so I think there was probably a lot of ad-libbing going on. It's very British humor. British humor, like it's a big part of it is that it's played very straight. So like they don't play like they're joking. They play like it's taken very seriously in the lines that they're delivering. Like even the
just a flesh wound.
Like that is all like taken like extremely seriously while you're lopping this guy's arms off and he's trying to kick you and stuff, but they're still taking it very seriously. The political debates, like
fart in your general direction.
That political debate about farting in your general direction. Not exactly what I meant. This political debate.
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just for some watery tart threw a sword at you.
So, I liked that. That was a good part.
Like making fun of the whole Arthurian legend, and in general making fun of kings and queens and how people come to power and how you form systems of government. But again, all delivered like perfectly flat, right? And one of Presley's favorite lines.
We want a shrubbery.
But it's like a dramatic, like again, like a huge pause, and then dramatic, like da-da, and everyone's like, "What? Wait, what?" And like it's all just so played, like perfectly flat.
I don't know what about it, but the word shrubbery is so good.
And if you watch Fawlty Towers or Monty Python's Flying Circus or any of the other like big Brit comedy things, which are fantastic, they're all similar, where it's like relatively deep concepts, like they're high philosophy, like high-minded kind of things. They're really punny and like silly, super, super silly in a lot of ways, but they play it very, very, very straight. I love it.
Like, it's like magical that they can do that.
I'm actually a big fan.
I actually heard a story about a different one of their movies where like they were doing this act with someone and who was a random paid extra, and they had to keep a straight face or else they wouldn't get paid, and it was amazing. And there was like the story of that. It was amazing.
I'm sure it was tough to work.
One of the things I had written down, wasn't this one of those movies that had a haunted set that had like a cursed set of some sort, like a bunch of bad stuff happened?
I don't know.
Not bad stuff, but just really weird things happened.
It's certainly possible. I don't remember that for this film specifically, but yeah, like the Don Quixote movie is the one that's sort of famously impossible. That's the one I was telling you the other day. There's a really great documentary about trying to make a Don Quixote movie that never actually got made. The documentary got made and it's fantastic, but the movie still hasn't been made. And oddly enough, that Terry Gilliam, who's one of the Monty Python guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the guy that's trying to make that movie is one of the guys. And I think he's the guy that did all the animations, all like the silly animations that Cooper loved.
Cool.
All the fart humor and people playing trumpets with their butts, with their farts. Cooper was really super into that.
I have to put this somehow on the podcast because I have something saved to my computer that is that. It is someone playing a trumpet with their butt with a cap with like very old time, like actual Renaissance art,
yeah,
with the caption "treason" in capital letters. And I don't know where I found it, but I've had it on my computer for years.
Well, maybe
and
that's
I think
where
about
Python
it a
got
lot.
It. Yeah, this is one that that reminded me of you a lot.
Silly English niggas.
This was so, and we've talked about this several times on the vlog for
I don't
sure. But like Presley went through a phase in her life for a while where she refused to acknowledge that silent letters existed, and so like she knew perfectly well how to pronounce words, but she just would pronounce the letters that were in them even if they were supposed to be silent. Like there was Island when we were living in Hawaii, yeah, there were Island and like Knife and Knigget would totally yeah
a phone.
Knigget would almost
I've
certainly be one of the words that she would
before.
Use. Yeah.
I would use knigget as an insult, definitely. It's one of those words that's like coward and clawed that just makes it, that not that it starts with a C, with a C sound, but that it's just a good insult. Knigget.
Yeah. It actually took me a while when I was watching this to figure out what he was calling it. Like why he was even saying knigget. I was like, oh, knights.
No.
Oh.
I have this thing where I'm sure people who...
Domino joining in the podcast again. Are you down here? All right, chill out. Right,
thank
okay.
you for your thoughts, Domino. Yeah. Where, like, I'm sure those of you who are familiar with the internet will know, like, when you misspell something on purpose mm-hmm. to give it a specific inflection.
Oh,
whenever
yeah.
someone does
yeah.
that with knight, I think I read it as Knigget,
yeah,
so it didn't
yeah.
confuse me that
no,
much.
Knigget's
except for some
good.
Reason, I thought that he was saying knight spelled wrong because he said Knigget.
No, I think he's just pronouncing it as Knigget.
Knigget.
Because if you pronounce every letter in it, you can get to Knigget. Yeah, you totally can get to Knigget.
Knigget's a good
yeah.
word.
The other one, I really love the scene about burning the witch and the logic of
yes,
what floats and what... Yeah.
Can tell me story
and
ideas.
She turned me into a newt.
We got better.
Because everybody like looks at the guy like he turned me because you know that's Tim the like they're all the same guys that are playing all these parts right so that's Tim the Enchanter
yeah.
and like Lancelot he plays all the parts and so having yeah like when like they just play it so well and so straight where like the guy's like what proof do you have and he just immediately says well she turned me into a newt and everybody's like what
I got better.
That's just, but that's a famous
so
line that you'll hear.
That's a good
too.
Line.
Yeah, yeah.
I had
okay,
to. Oops. This is one of the scenes that I had to spell check for CS50. They had a assignment where you have to use a spell
okay.
checker.
Yeah.
And you have to build a spell checker, which is extremely hard.
Right.
And I did it in one of the scenes that I had to. One of the texts I had that I to
was
spell check
scene?
Was this scene. Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah, and it's really just the like. Again, sort of making fun of the medieval science and logic of what floats and what also floats. And then, like, King Arthur showing his brilliance by coming up with a duck as the thing. Exactly, right?
Like, it's like, whoa!
Yeah, so if she weighs less
How
than
does
a duck,
human
or the same as a duck...
Possibly weigh the same as a duck.
Well, yeah, right.
I don't understand.
It's clearly tilted
and ducks
a little
are clearly
bit
made of wood.
The, right?
Obviously.
Well, and even, like, mini wooden ducks. Oh, bringing it back to Adventure Zone. And the funny part is, I don't even get that reference.
Not yet. I get handed a duck by a Magnus at...
Like, I'm making references I don't get.
I got handed a wooden duck by a Magnus
a
at LACC, and it was really, really cute, and I, like, almost started crying when it was given to me. It was
yeah,
amazing.
I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, that was a good time. Cool. Woo. So, overall thoughts on Monty Python and Holy Grail?
Oh, we're done. Okay.
No, keep going.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like, it's a good movie. Mom doesn't like it. I
it's
don't
not
understand.
Everyone's cup of tea, for
How?
Sure. You got to be
it's
in the
so
right
funny.
Mood, and you got to be the right sort of temperament to. Yeah, British humor is definitely not for everyone.
It's so.
It's very. You got to like. You probably like puns if you like British humor.
Yeah.
You probably like. There's a certain type of person that gets into the British humor.
I'm
I think,
definitely that kind of person that like. Claims they hate puns. Like if someone will pun, I'm like, I hate you so much. I am going to end your life. But then again, yeah. I also really love puns.
No, I think like we'll watch some other stuff. We'll watch, you know, Fawlty Tower and maybe Video. The Meaning of Life and Absolutely Fabulous, which Mommy actually did like.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't like AbFab? Oh, I thought you liked AbFab. Okay.
And Benny Hill.
Oh, Benny Hill. Yeah, Benny Hill's a little different. That's a
I
little different.
I think I know someone named Benny Hill.
You know, he used to love some Benny Hills, Pompey.
Bobby used to love him some Benny Hill. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm like, this is an important movie to know.
Important.
Like, even it's a little, it's actually, it's not. Like, I was going to say it's a little dated, but like, no. The political conversation you could have today,
yeah.
Right? Like, a lot of the conversations in it, the things that they are saying, you know, it's this whole idea of like being subversive. In some ways, through comedy,
yeah.
But you're playing it super straight, right? Like this whole political commentary about what's going on. Like, it's like obviously the guys are brilliant, right? Mm-hmm. Like really smart guys,
and
they're making these dumb comedies, but there's so much layered in there. I mean, if you listen to that entire conversation about political systems, like that's a pretty significant amount of research and amount of work, and it's very densely packed, and so it's very
like
cool.
One of those things. Like, just like the fact that it was in Monty Python, it seems like one of those things you would see on Tumblr was someone seriously reacting
right.
to something that they're pasting in from Monty Python.
Well, the funny part is, like, the, you know, the guy, they're British, obviously, so they have a monarch.
Yeah.
Right? And so they're making this commentary about the monarchy in a really funny
way.
They have one, right? Yeah, so it's pretty brilliant.
Like,
it's,
yes.
it's a brilliant film on a ton of levels.
It's a
super
film.
Silly, like, on the surface, you can just watch it and laugh, and it's ridiculous. And there's something funny also about like you laughing at something that the characters on the screen don't seem to be in on.
I know.
Right? Like they're not doing it in a joking, funny way, but you're laughing at them doing it. Yeah. Like there's something kind of funny about that too, right? But if you dig a little bit deeper and listen to what they're saying and pay attention to the words and stuff, then it's a really thoughtful and sort of deep analysis of a lot of things while it's stupid and silly and funny at the same time.
And that makes the best things.
It does. It's awesome. I love it. I'm glad that you got to watch that.
Yes. I have experienced, and I am still standing the fact that I have seen this movie before. It was just a really, really long time ago. Because I think we went through a period
mm-hmm.
when I was like 7 or so, where you made me watch movies. Like you made me watch The Princess Bride, and I think you made me watch this movie.
Yeah, you might not have been ready for this
yet.
One. Yeah,
but
you
might
not
at that time.
It. Yeah, I think now you're ready for it though.
Yeah.
It's super funny.
I really liked it.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about my assignment.
Ooh, about my assignment for you, okay.
Yeah, for next week.
My assignment is, I'm sure you're judging me really hard just from telling you the name, it's called Doki Doki Literature Club.
Okay.
And it is a visual novel on Steam for free. I've actually already played through
it. So it's like MS Paint?
That's what? A visual novel!
Yeah, no, like the,
Homestuck. Oh my god!
It's,
oh my god!
Is Homestuck
I didn't know that
not
was a
visual
Homestuck.
Novel?
It is!
Yeah.
I didn't know you were talking about Homestuck for a second. I'm sorry, I just felt my soul leave my body when I realized.
Or 17776.
17776 is very good.
That's a visual
but
novel
it's
too.
It's more of visual novel as in dating sim. Like, it's called a visual novel, but it's basically a dating sim.
Right.
But it's really, 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 really screwed up.
You're not making me look more forward to it.
It's really screwed up. It's actually,
not helping
it
your
is
case.
Listed under psychological horror game.
Okay.
It's very fun.
No,
I played through half of it trying to get the good end, but I have to figure out how to restart it now before I can play it. I'm very, extremely excited to see your reactions
so,
going into
are we
this.
Gonna, are we
going
to play this together so you can see me play it, or I just need to play it before we talk next week?
No, I'm gonna watch you play this because I want to see your reactions to a lot of very specific bits.
Yeah.
I will say, I may not actually be giving you this assignment if I realized that the game was free and played it first instead of watching someone else play it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I watched this be played by GT Life Game Theory.
Okay.
I watched them play it.
Yep.
And I was like, cool. And then, because I thought it was money, and I didn't want to spend money on a game called Doki Doki Literature Club.
I thought you were saying I thought it was money. Like, man, you're throwing out, like, rad, and you're throwing out all these, like, 80 phrases all of a sudden, 80s things.
Like, be more chill.
What are the words you're using these days? It's sick. I keep hearing you go, oh, it's sick. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, how is this stuff coming back?
But,
so I was totally ready for you to be like, yeah, it was money. You're so money and you don't even know it, which you don't know. You gotta kill the bunny. Like, you're totally, you don't know any of that. But.
No, it was costed doll hairs.
Uh-huh.
It costed the money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and I did not want to spend money on a game called Doki Doki Literature Club.
Okay.
So I decided to watch someone play it, and then once I realized that it was
never
free,
judge a book by its
cover. I got so mad. No, I've been told I started playing or watching people play this game because I saw a post on Tumblr about like do not play this game. The game starts with a warning that is do not play this if you are underage, have anxiety or depression. And
so
of course I played it.
Why are you playing it?
Yeah. I mean, against all the warnings, played it. But And there's a post on Tumblr, please take this warning seriously. Yeah. And I was like, I want to play this game.
No, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I didn't want to spend money on it because I didn't feel like buying a video game at that time. And then I watched it play. No, but then I realized it was free. And I decided to make it play.
How long do you think does it take to play it if you play all the way through it?
Just to play the game, it's like about 4 hours, which is the maximum thing. Yeah. To play all the way to the true ending, which you'll get without digging through the files and stuff.
Yeah.
So that is, and then I will make you watch there's about 30-minute video on YouTube called All of the Secrets in Doki Doki Literature Club.
Okay.
I'll make you watch that so we can discuss the secrets as well.
Okay.
I'm super excited to show this to you because I got into it last week, right after we've been the podcast, and I was like,
cool.
This is amazing.
Okay,
I'm very excited.
What's the second thing?
It's just one thing because it's 4 hours, right? Because the rule is I can make you do 4 hours.
Yeah, if you've got an easy second thing, we can do a second thing.
Okay. I'm gonna make you listen to one of my favorite albums again, which is ridiculously way underrated, which is El Radio by Chris Garneau. Who knows how to pronounce his last name?
I bet he does.
He does.
I bet a lot of people do. In fact,
not me. I don't.
Okay.
Who
knows?
It is called El Radio.
Oh.
I'm just saying.
Somehow in that conversation, I got to Who Knows. What's the name of the album?
No.
Who Knows? That's a weird album name. Okay.
No, I said Who Knows how to pronounce his last name.
Yeah, I got that. Okay, what's
it called? It's called El Radio.
El Radio.
Yes. So under, like,
I think
the
that means the radio.
Whoa.
My Spanish isn't great, but I think that means, I think it might be El Radio.
Fine. Whatever.
Okay.
The album, it's really good. The videos, like the official videos on YouTube, because I'm sure people are familiar with this. YouTube has, YouTube itself will upload music it has the rights to from an official YouTube profile.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And those videos only have 100 views, which makes me so mad because it's such a good album.
Yeah.
And I know.
We'll get some more people to listen to it.
The fact that a bunch of people listening to this have heard Dirty Night Clowns, which is a very popular fandom song, especially in Homestuck.
AMVs?
Yep,
yeah.
Fandom AMVs.
All right.
It was a really big Homestuck one, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard that specific song, but not a lot of people have heard the album it's from, and it's fantastic. It's a really, really good album, and it has made me cry before.
Sweet.
Definitely, many times.
I will do both of those things, and we'll be back here in a week, and we'll talk about them.
Yes.
Yep.
Make sure, too, if you are to subscribe to the podcast, if that's a thing you can do. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm so used to saying make sure to subscribe.
Oh, you know what? I will throw out there, and I'm actually going to cut this into the beginning of the thing, too, a little bit. But what would be super, super, super helpful for us, if you guys have the time to do it and are willing to do it, would be to go give us a review on iTunes.
Yes.
I think that's one of the things you can do most to kind of help a podcast out, is to go kind of give us a little bit of review and post something about it overall. Even if you don't listen to it on iTunes and don't listen to the podcast that way, if you can go give us a review over on iTunes, that would be huge. Again, Twitter is...
Our Twitter is at not first time show. It's at validate me. Validate me cast. Yes, at validate me cast.
It's at validate me cast.
I don't even know me on social media.
Our Gmail is
at validate me podcast
at gmail.com.
Yes.
And of course, you can watch this on the Act Out Games channel. You may be watching it there every Friday. You can watch the video of this as well, and you can leave comments below and let us know kind of what's going on down there.
Woo!
Yeah. Awesome. So I think we're gonna wrap up. We still don't really have much of an outro. I'll play the music on the way out.
And we just say bear with me.
Bear with us.